It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, Kim Munson, that's spelled MONSON.com, and email me at kim@kimmunson.com. I love hearing from you and continue to see more and more people signing up for the weekly newsletter, and so be sure and do that. We have a very important show planned for you today. In studio with me is a couple of my really valued sponsors, and that is Karen Levine, award-winning realtor with RE/MAX Alliance. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And Lauren Levy, you are a mortgage specialist with PolyFi Financial, and it's great to have you here as well.
Thank you. Great to be back.
And Liz Peets, here you are. You are the VP of Government Affairs for the Colorado Association of Realtors, and you've got information for us. I'm not sure it's good information, but you have information for us, so it's great to have you in studio as well.
Thanks for having me.
So we'll jump into the real estate market in the second segment and get an update on interest rates. Lauren, I heard that interest rates have gone down.
Yeah, they've, especially today when I woke up, interest rates tend to go down when the market goes down a lot of times. And so I just woke up and saw the futures were down today. So that means a 10-year note is down, which usually means rates are down.
Okay. So we'll talk about that in the second segment. And then, Karen, we'll talk. You'll give us an update on what's happening in the Denver real estate market. So great. Well, it's good to have you guys here. Let's jump in. As you know, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And if something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. You should be able to persuade them in the battle of ideas. And that's really kind of the whole American idea, is freedom. And freedom, of course, is liberty, is the responsible exercise of freedom. And now I can't remember which guest said this, but for every freedom, there's a corresponding duty. It's not like a just willy-nilly, you can do whatever you want. It has to be responsible, and that's really the American idea. That's why we do this show. We're continuing to see the socialization of key things in our society that really make our lives better, like transportation and housing and education, healthcare. And that's why we do this show, is so that we can get our brains around these issues so that you can converse reasonably with good, calm voices with your friends, your family, and your colleagues. Now, we like to start with some kind of inspiration. And so today, Amelia Earhart, and I didn't realize she was a Kansas girl as well. She was born in 1897 in Atchison, Kansas, and then she disappeared in 1937 near the Holland Island in the Central Pacific Ocean. She was an American aviation pioneer and author. She was the first female aviator to fly solo across the Atlantic Ocean. She set many other records, wrote best-selling books about her flying experiences, and was instrumental in the formation of the 99s, an organization for female pilots. And she said, "You can do anything you decide to do." And I love that. My dad used to say that all the time, too. You can do anything that you decide to do. So that is our inspiration for this morning. Now, I was trying to find quotes or funnies, and Lauren, you'd seen this headline as well. This is probably not really funny, but in Alabama, we have a legislator that has proposed mandatory vasectomies for men over the age of 50 or if they've had three children. So I thought, well, I'll see if I can find some Alabama vasectomy jokes. And I can't find anything that I can say on the air. So with that, then I thought, okay, let's go to real estate jokes. And so I found this meme. This is Austin Powers. And he says, I noticed the for sale by owner sign in your yard. I, too, like to live dangerously. And I thought that it was had a little bit of humor, but Karen, you and I talk a lot about it across the spectrum, you know, whether or not it's accounting or in the mortgage business like Lauren, or in the investment business like Jason McBride, in the real estate business. It's always good to work with trusted people, trusted professionals. There's been a few times that I've done something along the line of for sale by owner. It ended up taking more time and costing more money. And so that's why I thought that was a little humorous. Did you find that humorous at all?
I do. Well, I don't. But it's one of those things that the proverbial you get what you pay for. And people don't buy and sell houses every day. So totally important for them to get a trusted advisor on their side and in a marketplace that is always changing.
And particularly now with what is happening in the Denver real estate market. So I always recommend professionals. Any of the sponsors that you see on my website, I highly recommend each and every one of them. As many of you know, I'm a true entrepreneur like many of you. I buy my airtime. So it's because of you trusted sponsors that I'm on the air. So thank you on that. And to our team, we've got a great team. That's Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. Thank you for all that you do. And to each of you listeners, you're treasured, you're valued, you have a purpose. Go out today and strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. There's a lot going on down at the State House. Tomorrow is a very important day. This vaccination bill is making its way through the legislature. And I've really been working on trying to get my brain around this because and as I read the bill, they talk about when George Washington had the Continental troops inoculated for smallpox, makes sense, or, you know, World War II or World War I, World War II, yellow fever vaccinations, makes sense. I found it kind of interesting that they would go back and cite all of that within the bill. And as I try to get my brain around it, it's like there was the past regarding vaccinations. There's where we are now, where we have the New York legislature that is trying to pass legislation that would force every seventh grader to have the HPV vaccine, which is HPV is transmitted sexually. So it's kind of like, I'm not sure I really think that people should be forced to do that. And then I read the bill that is down at the Colorado State Legislature, and there's all kinds of tracking in that and reporting and it looks like maybe shaming that could occur in the future, and forcing an unelected board could force vaccinations that haven't even been invented yet, and people wouldn't have the opportunity to say, hold on, wait a minute. And so setting that up, that is going to be heard in hearing tomorrow. And Pam Long is on the line, and I talked with her yesterday. Pam Long, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks for having me.
And the week is so jammed up, and this bill is getting pushed through really, really fast. And you and I should have a much longer conversation about this. However, as jammed up as the week is, we thought, okay, let's do 5 minutes on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then we're going to have to come back to this and give you more time. But tomorrow, the bill is going to be heard in committee. So tell us what committee, where is it at, and you're really recommending people show up. And if you can't show up, be sure and email the legislator. So set this up so we can help folks take a stand on this.
Right. SB 163 is going to the Senate Health Committee tomorrow, Wednesday, February 19th. This is a fast-track bill that was just introduced a week ago. Yesterday, we talked about how the school immunization bill is really using vaccine education as a Trojan horse to put anyone, any adult or child who exempts from just one of the now 70 doses of vaccines in a registry. And this registry uses coercive methods, reminder, recall, home visits to ensure that your choice is always yes. I mean, there are 60 industry lobbyists working on this bill to sell their products. And today I just wanted to mention, there's a lot of diversions that you mentioned in the legislative declaration, historical, and what people really need to focus on is this is an attack on religion. Colorado has had both their religious exemption and personal belief exemption since 1978, and many people of faith exempt from some of these newer vaccines that were cultivated on aborted fetal tissue.
Yeah,
SB 163 changes the religious and personal belief exemption, two separate exemptions, to non-medical. This is the state giving power to doctors to approve, likely disapprove, your religious beliefs.
It is truly, truly astounding. And Pam, as I work to try to get my brain around this, I'm talking, you know, looking past, and it seems like those that are wanting to use this coercion in the future look to the past. They mention smallpox. They mention yellow fever. But then, there's things in the future that could be forced upon us that we wouldn't even have a choice on. And as you mentioned, there's a registry and there's a re-education video. And these are words that are danger words, Pam.
Right. The last section of the bill is this huge takeover of bypassing the legislative process, giving the health department, CDPHE, power from here on out that they've never had to approve every CDC recommended vaccine. And people need to know that vaccines have grown from the 10 doses you received in the 80s to 70 doses now. Some of the parents are delaying, spreading out, opting out. Some of these vaccines are for sexually transmitted diseases. And I just want all your listeners to know, these will be mandates for adults as well that will affect your employment, your travel. You will be under the mandate to get maybe an influenza vaccine that you don't want, or an HPV vaccine, a highly reactive vaccine that you have maybe no risk of, you know, even having that disease. You will have no choice under this mandate.
Okay, so what people need to do, and I want to mention just a couple of other things. I think you have to look at the big context. So under this bill, you know, it's kind of under the guise that we care about children. But then the bill that Patty had pulled as our bill of the day is Senate Bill 20-083, which is prohibiting courthouse civil arrest. And so basically, if somebody, you know, has to go to court, and it's really geared towards illegal aliens, that they cannot be arrested at the courthouse if they are there. And so, you know, we have this big fight going on between the sanctuary city, Denver, and ICE, which is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And there are four illegal aliens that ICE would like to talk to be informed about, and three of them have been released up onto the streets. One of them is still in jail, I believe. But interestingly enough, I got to find where this is. Three of the men have been released from jail, and one is still being held. Denver jail officials notified ICE before the three were released, but Denver went ahead and released them. And U.S. border agents, let's see, they said that one of them was actually trying to strangle a child. So, Pam, you don't need to comment on this, but this is my thought process. It's like, wait a minute. On one hand, we say we are trying to protect children, but yet we have these other policies that aren't. And so when I really look at that, it's like, I'm not sure that you're really walking your talk. And so I think that's why we need to put the skids on this vaccination bill right now. Pam, we're just about out of time. You know, you are a very accomplished. Would you tell our listeners just a little bit about you?
Well, my background is in the U.S. Army military. I'm a former medical intelligence officer in the rank of captain. I advise commanders on force protection. We vaccinated soldiers. But what we have here is basically an industry takeover of forcing these products. You have to look at vaccines as products, and you have to be an informed consumer. And maybe you don't want all 70 doses. You need to protect that choice. And I'm asking people to contact the governor.
Okay, so contact the governor. And then also, if you go to, you can put in Colorado SB 20-163. That'll bring you up to the bill. I'd recommend that people read this as well. I used to think it was above my pay grade to actually read this legislation. It's not. So know what you're talking about when you're out there having a conversation with people. And then also, try to be down at the State House at what time tomorrow, Pam?
We're telling people to get there as early as 9 for parking, because we are expecting this bill to go straight to committee after adjournment.
Okay. And then certainly we need to then email all of those that are on the health care and health insurance. Oh, wait, which committee is going
Senate
to?
Senate Health.
The Senate Health. So contact everybody there as well, and you can Google that. So, Pam, we'll talk again tomorrow morning. I really appreciate you calling in.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And before we go to break, it is March Madness is right around the corner. Rock Chalk Jayhawk and the Avalanche Nuggets, they're in the hunt for their divisions. And so the place to watch all the games is Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of the action. Wednesdays are Dine and Wing Day, all the wings you can eat for $15.99. They've got these new roasted wings. My favorite's the boneless wings. If you don't want to cook, you can drop by Hooters Restaurants and pick up dinner to take it home, or you can have Hooters wings delivered right to your front door, which, Karen, you know I do that when the girls come over.
They're yes, you do.
Pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. So check out my website, KimMunson.com. We're going to go to break. In studio with me is Lauren Levy with PolyFi Mortgage Specialist, Karen Levine, award-winning realtor with RE/MAX Alliance, and Liz Peets, who is the VP of Government Affairs for the Colorado Association of Realtors. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. kim@kimmunson.com.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday
to you.
Happy birthday.
Karen Levine, it's your birthday. Happy birthday.
I don't think we needed to tell everyone it was my birthday.
Well, happy, happy birthday. And you deserve a prize for being here this early on a snowy morning. And so do you, Lauren and Liz, for being here on this snowy morning. But happy, happy birthday. We've
Thank
been
you.
Friends for a long time. And happy birthday.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's jump in here on mortgages and real estate. You know, I remember when I was on city council, I would hear these PBIs talk all the time. Oh, millennials, they don't want a house. They just want to be in an apartment. They just want to rent. You know what? I was at an event, an economic forecast, and the economist there said, actually, people really would like to have their own home. And we've seen, I think, through government policy, that it's making more and more difficult to have new bills, making things more expensive. Liz, I know we're going to talk with you about that in segments 3 and 4. So why don't we go first to you, Karen? What's happening in the Denver real estate market right now?
The Denver real estate market continues to be challenged by lack of inventory. We've been talking about this for 3, 4, 5 years. And
you think they'd be able to figure it out then?
You would hope so. You would hope so. And Liz will get probably an opportunity to talk about what we refer to as our construction defect legislation. And the Colorado Association of Realtors, along with other allies, were able to make some changes to that bill a year or so ago. And we were starting to see some momentum and some condominiums coming out of the ground, which could help with some affordable housing, provide some entry-level housing. And now we're seeing a bill that's going to
walk that back.
And make it worse. I mean, just I think what people need to understand is that when you don't have product, you don't have homes to sell, prices are going to go up and affordability is going to go out the window. Some other things that we're seeing is limited growth initiatives that the city of Lakewood passed last year, and they are really struggling to how do you be fair and how do you meet the needs of the voters in passing that legislation. But many developers and builders had millions of dollars invested in projects that were already approved. So there's all these turmoil things going on.
There's a lot of moving parts, and I really think that Lakewood growth initiative has been kind of a knee-jerk reaction to the policies that have been going on. We've seen these PBIs that what they've been working to do is to put people into these apartments up and down the corridor of where the light rail is. Mm-hmm. And people don't really want that. And then they're limiting the number of parking spots with these apartment buildings because they think if we do that, then people won't have their cars. Well, you know what? Millennials like to have their cars so that they can go to the mountains on the weekends. And so where do you park your cars if the project doesn't have enough parking? Well, you start to park in the neighborhoods, and the neighborhoods say, well, Wait a minute. And so I think it was actually a reaction to these policies that have been pushed for quite some time.
But I would say on the positive, we may not have a lot of choices out there, but people want home ownership. And what we saw, there was a number that came out of the Denver Metro Association of Realtors, which was, I found, somewhat astounding. And let me just pull that up really quick here. Is that the amount of homes that came on the market in January were basically that same number, almost identical, went under contract.
Okay.
So there's lots of great activity, and Lauren can share the fact that it is affordable from an interest rate perspective.
Well, and that's where we wanted to go. Even though the prices have gone up, the fact that interest rates are low is still really positive for people that want to buy a new home, or if they might want to refinance.
Absolutely. You know, when we talk about this subject, I see a lot of younger people trying to buy homes. I think the true investor people out there, the people that have long-term growth on their mind and building wealth, will tell you if other people want to rent, they'll buy the house and rent to them and let them pay their mortgage for them, especially at these low rates. I mean, people are buying investment properties in the mid-fours. That's an incredibly low interest rate for an investment property.
So can that pretty well cash flow itself then?
Absolutely. I just talked to a gentleman yesterday who has two rental properties, and he's buying a new primary residence. He has a growing family, but both of his rental properties cash flow. He's positive on them both. So that's helping his income. He's making money on both properties while he's building equity through other people paying his mortgage for them. And with regular refinance rates on primary residences in the mid-threes, you know, absolutely, rates are low. And if people are sitting there with a 4% rate thinking they've got a really low rate, it might be worth taking a look at.
Before we went on the show, Karen had mentioned that there's advertisements that some of the interest rates are like in the 2-something range. Yep.
I get calls all the time. It's not so deceptive anymore. Like, people don't call me. Every once in a while I get an email about, hey, I saw a 2.75 rate on the 30-year, which that doesn't exist. I think the lowest 30 years we're seeing without a ton of points is like 3.375, but really like 3.5. So that 2.75 is, yeah, that 2.75 is typically a 15-year. But even there, you have to look at, Karen and I were talking about APR, and basically the higher the APR is above the rate, the more fees you're paying. And so if someone's advertising a 2.75 rate with a 3.2 APR, there's points built in there to buy that rate.
Okay.
And those points are going to the lender through discount points and typically a combination of origination to the lender. So you really want to look at the APR when you're comparing, because, you know, it doesn't make sense for everybody to pay points. You have to calculate your recapture, how long you're going to be in that house. And sometimes it does make sense. A lot of times it doesn't.
Okay. So we've been talking a little bit about first-time home buyers, and I think a lot of young people think that they have to have 20% saved up for them to buy their home. But in talking with you, Lauren Levy, and with you, Karen Levine, that's not necessarily the case.
It's definitely not. There's a lot of programs out there. I don't deal with a lot of them on the down payment assistance program through the government. It's just my business model the way it is. But even with as little as 3.5% down to do an FHA loan, and if you have good credit and a good work history, 5% down will get you an excellent rate on a regular.
Do you work with people in that arena?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And mortgage insurance prices have come down so much over the last couple of years for people with strong credit that it used to be really prohibitive. It kind of still is on FHA loans, but on regular conforming loans, you know, if you have strong credit, your mortgage insurance won't even really be enough to deter you anymore.
Okay.
So it is worth. A lot of people don't put 20% down anymore.
Okay. So with that, Karen, I know that you work with, you know, people wanting to get that first buy, and how's that going in this crazy market right now?
Well, it's going well. I mean, it's challenging, and that's why we encourage home buyers to seek out a trusted professional like myself, because navigating a low inventory marketplace has its challenges, and you have to be able to position yourself well so that your offer gets accepted. And with partners like Lauren doing your financing, you're assured that you're going to follow through with the financing portion of the contract. And with someone like me that's been in the industry for many years, like some 30, I bring a
so
good.
So you're 37 on this birthday?
I am. I started very young. you need a good team behind you.
You do.
You really do.
You really do.
And I had a thought when Lauren was talking about these great interest rates, and we talk about affordability. When I bought my first home, interest rates were in the tens, about 10.5. I obtained an adjustable rate mortgage at 7.5. But if you look at that rate compared to today's rate and you look at prices, the spread is really not as astronomical as we continue to promote the affordability issue. Okay. People's incomes are more than they were when I bought my first home, and interest rates being as low as they are, it causes the affordability story to actually be a little bit blown out of proportion.
Okay, that's an interesting perspective. I hadn't really thought about it like that. So,
you know, Kim, one more thing, quickly. We talk a lot when I'm on here about reverse mortgages and I deal with those. But one of the reasons that's driving people into reverse mortgages is this affordability, because people will have these $500,000 homes and their children are gone, they're older now, and they like to downsize. But in Colorado, the term downsize almost doesn't exist, because you can get a smaller home, so your size will go down for the same amount of money, or you can buy a condo or townhome with a $400 a month HOA, which makes people have a payment that was almost what they're leaving. And so it affects people on both ends, especially older folks that want to downsize. It's really hard to do there, too.
Okay. And so I recommend, if people want to talk about that, they should sit down with you. And so your phone number, I have it memorized, Lauren Levy. It's 303-880-8881, 303-880-8881. And you can go to my website, and all the information is there. And then, Karen Levine, your phone number is 303-877-7516, 303-877-7516.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, we're going to go to break here in just a minute. Before we do that, though, we have Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management on the line. I bet you wish you had driven in here early, too, huh, Jason McBride?
I bet you wish I had.
Yeah. So what's going on with the markets right now?
Well, first I was going to ask Lauren, in Denver, if people wanted to downsize, they could just go move into one of the tent cities downtown. I was wondering what the rates were and the down
those
requirement
are free.
For
those
a tent.
Those are free, but they won't get kicked out, so that's good.
Well, but since there's so many moving in, isn't the street corner space going to go up in price as well, and there'll be none for sale?
I'm not sure. Are they buying them now, or are they just kind of having a brawl to see who gets it?
Yeah, I'm not sure how they decide.
Maybe
it's a lottery.
Yeah, that could get pretty interesting, because all of a sudden then I could see, Jason, property rights coming in. It's like, this is my street corner. And then you could see property rights coming in, huh?
Well, that's why we need to talk to Liz in the next section.
Yeah, that's why we're going to talk to Liz Peets with the Colorado Association of Realtors in the next segment. So what's the market doing? Lauren said the futures look like they were down just a little bit.
Yeah, the futures are down a little. The market's been doing pretty well. It seems like the coronavirus talk, even if the talk hasn't faded, which I think it has to some degree, the market is not paying as much attention to it as it did when it first came out. So, it's worth continuing to keep an eye on, but I just don't think it's going to have a giant effect on the market unless something crazy happens, like a mutation where people are growing a second head or something like that.
Okay, well, hopefully that's not going to occur. So, speaking of a second head or an extra brain, if people wanted to have some more information about, how's that for a segue to your early market indicator that you put together, Jason?
Yeah, Zach's been kind enough to put those up on the website. And, Kim's, they're partially entertainment, but I'll tell you, there's a couple of these indicators that actually do have some pretty amazing statistics to them that, at least historically, and this isn't over just the last 2 years, we've gone back and studied 50 to 70 years worth of history on these early year indicators. Kind of, the Santa Claus rally, the January barometer, a couple others that are out there. And I do think a couple of them are certainly worth being aware of. Our early year indicator guide gives you a lot of the numbers year by year, and it's kind of interesting to see, you know, what has actually occurred. So there's no obligation to that. It's absolutely free. Folks can get one by just going to airpresidential.com. That's A-I-R, presidential.com. Or as you love to say, Kim, give Natalie a call at the switchboards at 7:30. Her number, 303-694-1600.
Okay, that, again, that number is 303-694-1600. Jason, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds great, Kim.
Okay, we're going to go to break. In studio with me is Lauren Levy with PolyFi Mortgage Specialist and Karen Levine, who is REMAX award-winning realtor. And then Liz Peets, we're going to get focused on you because you've got a lot of information. You're the VP of Government Affairs with the Colorado Association of Realtors. It's important information. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. That's MONSON.com. And we've got a full house here today. Karen Levine, award-winning realtor with REMAX Alliance. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial. And Liz Peets, let's talk with you. There's a lot of talk in Colorado about affordable housing. But it seems like there's things happening down at the state legislature that will make housing more expensive. I think Karen alluded to this construction defects legislation, which had in essence, it had just almost squashed a new condominium development, which that's typically been a vehicle that young people can start to get into a property and create some equity. And so we saw some progress on that, Karen. And then it looks like there might be something to roll that back. So Liz Peets, set that up for us.
Sure. Thank you for having me. So there are a couple of bills down in the Capitol that could affect the construction litigation reform that we passed in 2017. One bill is focusing on arbitration, and that's Senate Bill 93. And I think that one is really more focused on trying to get at a different element of arbitration, your cell phone or you go out on a cruise. But the problem is it pulls in the housing market because there's a lot of construction defect litigation that goes through arbitration. So the business community, I think, would prefer that we don't mess with the Federal Arbitration Act because that's where most of our standards come.
Okay.
But I think the bigger problem is Senate Bill 138. And that bill would change the statute of limitations and repose and tolling. So that sounds a little wonky, so let me explain it a little bit. When we pass the reform, there's a certain amount of time in the law that you can file a lawsuit. This bill would actually extend that time frame, which means it would make it harder to insure new products because it creates additional layers and years and time to file those claims. So builders need the certainty to be able to build good product. And I can tell you how this has affected the market in context. So a healthy market in the condo market's 24%.
Okay.
After construction litigation reform passed, the bipartisan reform, it changed that. So we were at 2% before that passed, and currently we're at 12%. So we're halfway back to a healthy market. Mm-hmm. If we were to now change that, we're going to go back down to 2% rather than keep climbing our way to 24%.
Seems like probably all these apartment builders up and down the corridor like the fact that they might be making it more difficult for people. That's just an editorial comment on my part.
Well, and it is from the standpoint that developers want to develop and build. And when you couldn't build condominiums affordably because of legislation, because of regulation, they saw still a marketplace for apartments and housing, because we still needed housing. We needed people to be able to live in things. So I wouldn't point at developers and builders for being the bad guy. I think you point at
the policies
uh-huh. that then looked, you know, they look for opportunity. And so that's where they saw it. What's interesting in the conversation today that I'm hearing, it all comes down to responsibility. It comes down to responsibility of a homeowner if they're having problems with their home to, if they want to file litigation, to file it timely. And now we're like, oh, but you haven't been a very responsible homeowner. Let's just give you more time. We talk about vaccines. You should be responsible. You should make those choices as a responsible individual. So I just keep hearing the conversation about responsibility and how government seems to think if they take us out of being responsible, everything will be lovely.
But it won't be lovely.
No.
And so they're messing with the market, Liz Peetz, in this legislation. And so to your point, we had legislation that, you know, people need a place to live. And so the response was apartments. But I think that if we freed up the market, many people would say, I would like to own. I would like to have a condominium. And so you did this construction defect reform. And you saw the markets respond to that. And now down there at the State House, they want to tap that back down.
Yeah, it's confusing because that bipartisan reform was pretty hard fought. I mean, it was a true compromise. No one was happy, which I think is the mark of good policy when you all kind of come out of it, well, I got something, but I didn't get everything. And I think this legislation is a disservice to that previous compromise, especially when there's a piece in that Senate Bill 138 that would basically allow for continuous tolling. So it could keep extending the possibility of a lawsuit, and there's no finality when it could be completed. I mean,
that's tremendous risk for somebody.
Absolutely.
So Lauren Levy, when a developer is, you know, trying to figure out what they're going to do, you know, they have to assess risk. And if there is this unknown out there, then that seems like that might tap down the new build in the condominium market.
Well, not only that, from my standpoint as a mortgage lender, this has a great effect because these ladies can tell you
not
that.
Not in a good way.
No, I mean, it's almost impossible to get a loan in a condo complex that is in the middle of a lawsuit. And so if there's lawsuits going on that just perpetually last on and on and on, you can have people that can't sell, that want to move out of that property and can't sell it unless someone's willing to pay cash to move in there.
Because they won't be able
to get a mortgage.
Yeah, and they may not, because they then see all that risk.
Mm-hmm. Right, and yeah, it just limits the market so much as from the lending standpoint, because even on the most qualified borrower with a huge down payment, we still have to get what's called a limited questionnaire on a condo, which pretty much just asks, is there a litigation involved in the HOA? And when there are condo, when the HOAs are in a lawsuit with the developer, then it makes it almost impossible to get a loan.
Wow.
On a reverse mortgage as well. Yeah. So even for older people.
Liz, I mean, you're down there on a regular basis. I don't understand this. This seems to me like it hurts people. I just don't understand.
Well, I'd hate to get into the minds of policymakers and why they decide to do what they do. But I think that is why you're seeing so many people push back within the policy circles, but also within the housing industry to say, hey, wait a minute. We worked really hard to get to something that allows the market to work, but also protects homeowners. And now you're going to take us back. And I mean, our market is really tight. We need supply.
Yeah,
this is just going to hurt us we aren't able to build.
We do need supply, Karen Levine.
We do. Okay. We do. And it's interesting. We talked about costs of building, and you look at somewhere between 20% and 30% is regulatory. And then land, you know, we can't just make land. That's a limited resource, and that's another 24%. And then the cost of lumber and steel. And it's interesting because everyone wants to point at the builder and the developer, and their profit margin has been dwindled down to about 9%.
Okay. And so, Liz, we talked about this yesterday as we were preparing for the show. So PBIs out there, they opine all the time about, oh, my gosh, affordability, affordability. But then we see things. We see policies that are making housing more expensive. And you just alluded to, I've heard that in Colorado, actually the cost of housing, at least 40% of it might go to regulations, but you're pretty confident with the 24%. So that means almost a quarter of the cost of something is because of regulations, Liz. I mean, it's astounding.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the things, if you're a business, you can't control the regulatory barriers. That's decided by policymakers. But that is the place where we can actually have an impact, because we can't control national things like tariffs or costs of steel, those kinds of things. Those are set by other factors. But what we can control is locally those regulatory barriers. I mean, there is some good news. We do see some interesting ideas about trying to figure out how we reduce impact fees or maybe water tap fees. But so far, those are just ideas. We haven't seen those actually come to fruition in a bill. And we'd love to see more of those on the tax incentive side that's really helping us reduce cost, rather than the types of policy that is making it harder for anyone who's trying to get a more affordable product to market. I mean, one of the things that we're seeing is, if you can build a smaller house and maybe work with local authorities to have the taxes and fees be subject to the use or the occupancy, that's one way to reduce costs. But that's assuming the local authorities are willing to work with you on those regulatory barriers.
And after serving on city council, I know that it can be different from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But another thing, Patty had pulled one of the bills. Now I can't remember the bill number, but it would force all new bills to have some kind of electric vehicle charging. And then I think there's another one regarding solar panels out there. So, Liz, you know what? Let's go to break. And then when we come back, let's talk about that, because those forcing that, instead of letting people choose that, increases the cost of housing across the spectrum. And when PBIs talk about affordability on one hand, and then on the other hand are passing things that makes it more expensive, it just doesn't match up. So Liz Peetz, Karen Levine, Lauren Levy, let's go to break. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. You can email me there as well. And Patty texted me. She said, under this bill on solar, right now the builder has to give the options. It's not yet mandatory. So we like to get everything correct. Thank you, Patty, for that. So let's go ahead and jump in on what's going on then with the solar, with the electric vehicle. And then there's a taxing thing that, Steve, you better be ready because your blood pressure is going to go up. So, okay, Liz Peetz. So talk to me about each one of those. So let's talk about the electric vehicle, because that ultimately, I think, can increase the cost.
Yeah, so it's House Bill 1155, and it requires a builder to offer energy-efficient options to a homeowner, not for property that's right now being built, but for future property. And I think it is a consumer-driven market. So if a consumer's asking for that, we have no problem with that. That's great. I don't know how much it's going to cost in terms of building into how much the house is going to cost ultimately. But I think from our point of view, one of the biggest things we want to make sure is that the real estate transaction is clear. One of the problems we see when that energy efficient equipment is leased is that homeowners may qualify for the mortgage but not qualify for the solar installation. And then that could jeopardize their ability to buy the house. So that's what we're trying to work on in the bill and amend that, give some consumers some education around that piece.
Okay. Okay. And the electric vehicle, I think we pretty well handled that. Now, there is something, Steve, fasten your seatbelt, because, you know, one of the things that we talk about is that it is never compassionate to take other people's stuff, whether with a weapon or policy or excessive and unpredictable taxation. And Liz, it sounds like there's something down there that might fall into that unpredictable and excessive taxation. So tell us about that.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of things that are kind of falling into that property taxes category. I think I can talk about one thing that has already died, thankfully, and then I'll talk about one that's still on the horizon. So the first one would have changed the property taxes in short-term rental. I know Lauren was mentioning renting out your property helped pay your mortgage. This would have changed the property tax structure from the residential 7% to 29% overnight, which we think is a pretty strong infringement of your property right, and also could really harm a lot of people in Colorado who do invest, whether they're a military family who has to get transferred really quickly, or maybe just a senior paying their mortgage with an investment. There's a lot of harm in that. Thankfully, the bill sponsor did postpone it and kill the bill himself. But I think we're going to continue to see a discussion around short-term rentals and what the property tax rate should be.
Sometimes they float these bills just to kind of soften people up, I think. So as we were preparing you and Karen and I yesterday, one of the things that people have said, well, it's not fair that somebody has a short-term rental at and paying the residential tax rate, and then you've got in the hospitality industry, you have hotels that are having to pay, you know, the commercial rate. And so the short-term rentals are competing with the hotels and motels. So how would you respond to that, Liz Peets?
Well, I think you have to make a distinction between a hotel or a motel and an Airbnb. They're completely different business models by design. But a hotel or motel has the ability to recoup some of those costs because they have a restaurant or a bar, or they can charge for alcohol. And an Airbnb, you usually would go there and bring your own wine, or maybe you want to cook. That's the reason you choose it. So to compare those and say the tax rate should be the same, you can't compare them. They're not apples to apples comparisons. They have differences.
Okay. So, Karen, I'm hopefully this makes sense, but I've always thought this is so kind of interesting now that if you did something for free, so if you let somebody come into your house and stay there on a short-term basis and they can cook and whatever, and you did it for free, government doesn't have a problem. If, in fact, you decide that you want to use your own personal vehicle, Lauren Levy, to take somebody out to the airport and not charge anybody for that, okay, the government doesn't get involved. But, of course, you don't make any money. There's no capitalism in that at all. But the minute you start doing Lyft or Uber or Airbnb and maybe making a little bit of money off of your personal property, the government's saying, wait a minute. So what's your comments on that, Karen Levine?
Well, they want their fair share of something that wasn't theirs.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting is capitalism is what built the country. And the fact that we were talking about free market enterprise, and that also builds the country. And so there is a point where fair taxation probably makes sense. But as I recall, there was a bunch of tea that went in a harbor because of taxation,
excessive. And, well, Steve's not even behind the bar. Board. I think he went to get a whole Lipton tea or something, you know. So, okay, Lauren, a comment on that?
No, I think it's always interesting to see what how the government reacts to these disruptive technologies, mm-hmm. these new things like Airbnb is new. Someone has a massive party at one in a more up and coming area, and the residents get mad and they complain to their legislatures, and we have a bill to tax the heck out of it so that people don't do Airbnb anymore. You know, Uber and Lyft came about, and then all of a sudden taxi licenses were going away. well, now they got to find a way to make money off the Uber and stuff, and so bills come about. It's always interesting to see how they react to these disruptors.
Well, and I've talked to politicians that they've said, well, you know, we continue to have more and more demand for services. It's like, wait a minute. That's not government's role to be providing more and more of these services. So, Liz, anything else on that? Because you've got a bad boy that you may want to talk about that we need to understand. Anything else on any of those
others? I think the
only
thing I would say is there's a way to narrowly target regulation in an appropriate way. Like if you wanted to regulate where you put your trash in the mountains to make sure that it's bear-proof, that's a reasonable way for the government to regulate.
But it should be on the local level. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. Put. Okay, and when we talk about local control, because that's something we talk about all the time, and this was a thought process when I was on city council, is the ultimate local control is you. You need to be in local control of yourself, and then it goes to your family. And so local control doesn't mean just the city or the municipality. It means you. So, okay, Liz Peets, there may be something coming down the pike on mill levies, and I think we need to have a quick little lesson. We've got about 4 minutes or 5 minutes on mill levy so people understand the mill levy. So, Liz, can you explain that to folks?
Sure, and I'll do my best. I'm not a school finance expert. But the proposal that is coming is called mill levy equalization. And essentially what they're trying to do is reduce the state share of backfilling local governments with the property tax scheme. They'll tell you the state shouldn't be paying more to Aspen than it pays to a rural jurisdiction. But the way that they are proposing we fix this is by raising property taxes. And the state is able to set the mill levy rate. So what they want to do is require everyone to be at the 27 or 28 mills level, which would require every local jurisdiction to, within a certain time frame, raise their property taxes up to that mill level. And I think the problem we see is, what about the local areas that are at 4 mills or 16 mills and they have to go to 27 or 28? It's a huge tax increase.
Okay, so a mill levy is actually a percentage of the assessed valuation. It's a mill. And so is this 27 or 28 a total, including your schools and all your police and all that? Or
This is just schools. So that's actually a really good question, because it doesn't cover your total tax burden. Like if you have a special district or a fire district or a scientific and cultural facilities district, those are separate. This concept would only target the educational mills that the state sets. And whatever the state like level is, then you have your local amount, and the state will backfill based on Amendment 23 and the requirements under the Colorado Constitution and the negative factor. This would require local jurisdictions to put in more, and if you don't raise your property taxes, they're going to withdraw some of the state funding that you would normally get for education only.
And this is for education only. So what we could, in essence, see is a significant tax increase for some jurisdictions, right?
Right. To give you an example, I think Manitou Springs and maybe some part of Adams County have, if this were to pass, they would have to basically, with the taxes they already have in place that are voter approved, they'd be up to something like 200 mills.
With everything.
Mm-hmm. With everything.
Okay, so we talk about affordability. Think about that. That couple that's on a fixed income, increasing their taxes so significantly, it could ultimately price them out of their home.
Well, and I think that's a really good point, and I think Lauren would probably have a really good perspective on this. When you increase your taxes, your property taxes, because the way you pay your property taxes is actually tied into your mortgage. So if you increase that, it's like having a student loan with a high interest rate. It's going to increase the length of time for you to actually be able to pay your mortgage. And even like $50 makes a big difference in how much your interest rate will change or your ability to pay off your mortgage. So if you're increasing the cost of your housing, it's reducing your ability to have a budget that you can spend on other things.
And this seems like it might be going against Tabor and Gallagher as well, because it's not going to a vote, right? Or,
well, I think that's a really good question for policymakers. Why isn't this something that voters get a say in. Why is the legislature making this decision?
Okay. My friends, we are just about out of time. Lauren, what's your comment on that, just as you hear about this? This has not been introduced yet, right?
No, it should be coming soon.
At a theater near you.
Okay. No, it's important because more than saying that it's part of your mortgage, whether you escrow on your mortgage or not, we still have to factor in your property taxes when we're calculating your ability to repay. So it's a thing called debt-to-income ratio. And so the higher people's taxes are, the less they'll be able to qualify for as far as a monthly payment. So the less of a property they'll be able to buy. They'll have to go to a lower-priced property, mm-hmm. Okay. Which is almost impossible to do.
Okay. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial. It's great having you here. Your number is 303-880-8881, 303-880-8881. I got it out there. Okay. Karen Levine, it's great to have you here as well. Just a very quick comment on this.
I would just say be studious about who you choose to elect into office and to make sure that they're looking out for your best interests.
And then stay in contact with them afterwards as well. Keep them accountable. And you are an award-winning realtor with RE/MAX Alliance. The number is 303-877-7516, 303-877-7516. Liz Peets, VP Government Affairs with the Colorado Association of Realtors. I think we need to do this again really soon. Thank you for this great information.
Absolutely.
It's great to have you here. And our quote for today, then at the end of the show, is Amelia Earhart. She says, use your fear. It can take you to the place where you store your courage. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. Happy birthday, Karen Levine.
Thank you.
God bless you, and God bless America.
Fast on a rough road, riding high through the mountains, climbing, twisting, turning further from my home. Young.